ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमम् देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासम् ततो जयमुदीरयेत् नष्टप्रायेष्व भद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवति उत्तमश्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्ठिकी कृष्णे स्वधामोपगते धर्मज्ञानादिभिः सह कलौ नष्टदृशामेष पुराणार्कोऽधुनोदितः ग्रन्थराज श्रीमद्भागवतम् की जय. This is the fourth canto, chapter 27, and we're concluding today is the last verse, text number 30, concluding the narration of the attack by Chandavega on the city of Puranjana. So kindly repeat. Prajwaro ayam mama bhrata tvam cha me dhagini भव चरामि उभाभ्याम लोके अस्मिन् अव्यक्तः भीम सैनिकः प्रज्वारोऽयं मम भ्राता त्वं च मे भगिनी भव चरामुभाभ्यां लोकेऽस्मिन् अव्यक्तो भीमसैनिकः प्रज्वारोऽयं मम भ्राता त्वं च मे भगिनी भव चराम्युभाभ्यां लोकेऽस्मिन् अव्यक्तो भीमसैनिकः प्रज्वारोऽयं मम भ्राता त्वं च मे भगिनी भव चराम्युभाभ्यां लोकेऽस्मिन् अव्यक्तो भीमसैनिकः प्रज्वारोऽयं मम भ्राता भगिनी भव चराम्युभाभ्यां लोकेऽस्मिन् अव्यक्तो भीमसैनिकः प्रज्वारोऽयं भ्राता त्वं च मे भगिनी भव अभ्यां लोकेऽस्मिन् अव्यक्तो भीमसैनिकः प्रज्वारोऽयं मम भ्राता त्वं च मे भगिनी भव चराम्युभाभ्यां लोकेऽस्मिन् अव्यक्तो भीमसैनिकः Anyone else, ladies?
Prajvaro yam mama bhrata tvam cha me bhagini bhava charami ubhabhyam lokesmin avyakto bhima sainikaha. Prajvaro yam mama bhrata tvam cha me bhagini bhava charam yuvabhyam lokesmin avyakto bhima sainikaha. Prajvaro yam mama bhrata tvam cha me bhagini bhava charam yuvabhyam lokesmin avyakto bhima sainikaha. Prajvara, named Prajvara.
Ayam,
this.
Mama,
my.
Bhrata,
brother.
Tvam,
you.
Cha,
also.
Me,
my.
Bhagini,
sister.
Bhava,
become.
Charami,
I shall go about.
Ubhabhyam,
by both of you.
Loke,
in this world.
Asmin,
this.
Avyaktaha,
without being manifest.
Bhima,
dangerous.
Sainikaha,
with soldiers.
Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada.
The king of the Yavanas continued, "Here is my brother, Prajvara. I now accept you as my sister. I shall employ both of you, as well as my dangerous soldiers, to act imperceptibly within this world." Please repeat, the king of the Yavanas continued, "Here is my brother, Prajvara. I now accept you as my sister. I shall employ both of you, as well as my dangerous soldiers, to act imperceptibly within this world." Purport. Very interesting purport here by Srila Prabhupada. Kalakanya was sent by Narad Muni to Yavanaraja so that she might become his wife. But instead of accepting her as his wife, Yavanaraja accepted her as his sister. Those who do not follow the Vedic principles are unrestricted as far as sex life is concerned. Consequently, they sometimes do not hesitate to have sex with their sisters. In this age of Kali, there are many instances of such incest. Although Yavanaraja accepted the request of Narad Muni to show respect to him, he was nonetheless thinking of illicit sex. This was due to his being the king of the Yavanas and Mlechas. The word Prajvara is very significant, for it means the fever sent by Lord Vishnu. Such a fever is always set at 107 degrees, the temperature at which a man dies. Thus, the king of the Mlechas and Yavanas requested the daughter of time, Kalakanya, to become his sister. There was no need to ask her to become his wife, for the Yavanas and Mlechas do not make distinctions as far as sex life is concerned. Thus, one may outwardly be a sister, mother, or daughter, and still have sex. Yavanaraja's brother was Prajvara, and Kalakanya was invalidity itself. Combined and strengthened by the soldiers of Yavanaraja, namely non-hygienic conditions, illicit sex, and ultimately a high degree of temperature to bring on death, they would be able to smash the materialistic way of life. In this connection, it is significant that Narad was immune to the attack of jara, or invalidity. And similarly, jara, or the destructive force, cannot attack any follower of Narad Muni, or a pure devotee, pure Vaishnava. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purports of the fourth canto, 27th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Attack by Chandavega on the City of King Puranjana, the character of Kalakanya. Om Agnana Timiranthasya Gnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Nama. This is the concluding verse of the chapter. So the acharyas have commented, almost invariably paraphrasing the original acharya Sridhar Swami, who says that prajwaro maroko vaishnavo jwaraha. That is to say, prajwara means the deadly fever of Lord Vishnu. This is where Srila Prabhupada gets it from in his purport. And Srila Prabhupada elaborates, such a fever is always set at 107 degrees, the temperature at which a man dies. Actually, I think you can die at less than that. My mother recently went into the hospital with a fever, 103 degrees, and they were very nervous, because when you're old, even a 103 fever can kill you. So anyway, this is the fever as powerful as Lord Vishnu. I guess we can assume that Vaishnava Jwara, Vishnu's, the fever of Vishnu. So, or as Prabhupada says here, the fever sent by Lord Vishnu. So everybody is infected in this way. Prajwara, by Prajwara. So Prajwara yam mama bhrata. That Prajwara, he is my brother. Dvam chame bhagini bhava, and you will be my sister. He tells Kalakanya. Charami, I go about, ubabhyam, through both of you, loke asmin, in this world, avyakta, imperceptible, bhima sainikaha, along with my terrible soldiers. Here, prajwara, amarako vaishnavo jwaraha, maheshwarasya vyadhir antaha patitvat, Sridhar Swami says, bhima ghora. This bhima means ghora. Ghora means horrible, terrible, terrifying. And sainika, yasya, that's the sainika, this is the army, you can say, of old age, invalidity, or as Prabhupada says here, interestingly, non-hygienic conditions. These are the soldiers. Non-hygienic conditions, illicit sex, and ultimately a high degree of temperature, which brings on one's death. So this is the disease we have. It's a kind of a heart disease, you can say. Hridroga kama. Because the whole thing is revolving around sex life, which Srila Prabhupada is emphasizing here in his purport. First thing he points out, incidentally, his purport is mostly following that of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, who says the most of all the acharyas on this. So, according to the acharyas, according to Srila Prabhupada, those who do not follow Vedic principles, the Mlechas and the Yavanas, they don't have any concern for civilized protocol regarding sex life. They can go with anyone. Therefore, we find an instruction even for the Paramahamsas in the ninth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Matra Swasradu Hitrava Navivaktasano Bhave. One should not sit in a secluded place, even with one's own mother, with one's sister, or one's daughter. Someone might think that these instructions or this particular injunction will apply to the Yavana or the Mlecha, as we see in this case. But Balavan Indriya Gramo Vidvamsam Api Karsheti. The senses are so strong that even the mind of a learned man, they can become attracted. Vidvamsam Api Karsheti. Even a learned person can become attracted. And we have in our Shastras many examples of this. What's one example? Who can think? Vishwamitra? Okay. Lord Brahma. I was thinking of two others. Ajamila, one of them. Also, we have Bilvamangala Thakur. In Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami's commentary on Krishna Karanamritam, on the first verse, he gives some biodata of Janashruti, you can say, folk tradition of the story of Bilvamangala. Bilvamangala Thakur was a very learned man, Brahmana, and he was very respectable in many ways. But somehow or other, there was this disease lying within his heart. The word is used, hritchaya, what lies within our hearts. Sometimes we're not aware what lies within our hearts. No one can think, it's almost impossible to imagine, sex life with one's daughter, sister, or mother. But the modes of nature are such that they can impel someone to do this. Prakritehe kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvashaha. This is the idea. Very strong influence. And we're under the control of these modes of nature. So we're always instructed to cultivate sattva guna as much as possible. Srimad Bhagavatam gives this explicit instruction that as long as one is conditioned by maya, as long as one is operating within this duality of material existence, one must discriminate. Discrimination is a bad word in modern society. But Srimad Bhagavatam instructs us to discriminate very carefully between three things: sattva-guna, rajoguna, and tamoguna. Some things are tamasic. They are more infectious for the conditional mentality of trying to exploit Krishna's creation. Some things are rajasic. That's horizontal movement within this material world. Tamasic movement will take you down. Horizontal movement is passion. That takes you sideways. It means you don't go up. You also don't go down. You stay here. And then urvam gacchanti sattvastha. Those who are in the mode of goodness, they go up. So one should cultivate that mode of goodness because it's the fertile ground in which to plant the seed of bhakti. Why is it important to cultivate that fertile ground of sattva guna? Because, as we know in chapter 18, Krishna says bhakti is founded on the basis of Brahman realization. But what is the basis of Brahman realization? It is piety. Karma. Karma is synonymous with dharma. There's no difference between those two terms. Anything that is not dharma, it's not karma either. It's vikarma. Sometimes we see that people have the concept of something that vikarma yoga, conditional devotees. So here we can see that this Yavanaraja, it would seem that he was this kind of devotee. He was a devotee, you can say, from the waist up. So although he had enough respect for Narad Muni that he wanted to follow his instructions, at the same time he was conditioned in so many ways. We're not aware of how much our society conditions us, but social influences are much, much stronger than Shastric influences in general. We can see that. Just like when we want to know how to celebrate a particular festival, we generally don't consult the Shastras. Maybe here you do, because this is a Krishna-conscious place. But generally we call up somebody else and ask them, and social influences. So this is problematic, because our society is not necessarily very pure. We are socialized in this infected mentality that material enjoyment, particularly sex life, is the end-all and be-all of one's existence. I don't generally quote this very famous sannyasi who's not allowed to speak in ISKCON, but there's one very good thing that he said, which is that Indians are more attached to money than Americans are to illicit sex. That knocks two groups at once, doesn't it? Anyway, so this Yavanaraja, he was not so pure. And he was, evidently, Srila Prabhupada says, he was thinking of having illicit sex with Kalakanya, but he didn't marry her. This is another thing. When milk is available in the marketplace, who's going to bother to keep a cow? Srila Prabhupada says. So this is part of the karma mark. This is part of the dharma mark. Yes, you have residue in your subtle body, left over from so many previous incarnations as animals. Therefore, you have sex desire. Therefore, you want to eat meat. Therefore, you want to get intoxicated or gamble. These are animalistic propensities, sinful proclivities. So in order to regulate those and purify them, one accepts on the authority of the Shastra some particular sacrament. That sacrament is called samskara. And it purifies the mind. It purifies the material existence. If we read in chapter 16 of Bhagavad Gita, we find this very nice term Krishna uses, sattva samshuddhi, to purify one's existence. Now, what kind of existence can you purify? Can you purify your spiritual existence? Your spiritual existence is already pure. Nitya siddha Krishna prema sadhya kabhunai. You're not going to get it from anywhere else. It's already within you and it's already perfect. What has to be purified is one's psychophysical conditioning and maybe one's environment as well, as much as that's possible. This is why we have samskara. Samskara, as Vasu Ghosh Prabhu pointed out the other day, actually means refining, to refine something. And someone who has undergone samskara, you can say he's called samskrita, refined. Culture is therefore also called samskriti. Purification. So this is necessary on a cultural level, it's necessary on a physical level, and it's necessary in terms of the subtle body, antahakarana it's called, the conglomerate of the mind, intelligence, and false ego. It's also called sukshma sharira. So this is necessary, and the dharma, the practice of regulated samskars under the direction of shastra, such as marriage, this is actually necessary to purify the heart. Actually, in their commentaries on the Bhagavad Gita, our acharyas, particularly Baladev Vidyabhushana and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, they've taken great pains to elaborate on this principle that one cannot understand the instructions of the spiritual master until one's heart is a little bit purified. We can say maybe that is nashta prayeshu abhadreshu. One will twist and twangle the instructions received from a superior authority according to the whims of the mind until that mind or the heart, there's no difference in the shastra, the mind and the heart are the same thing, until it's purified. So therefore we have these sacraments, and civilized societies, they become elevated gradually through first the karma marg, and then when one matures in that process of dharma, cultivation of dharma, then that person comes to recognize, as the Mundaka Upanishad very nicely states, Parikshya lokan karma chitan brahmano nirvedam ayan nastya krita kritena. There is nothing here in this world to be found. In all the paths that one might take in life, all the options that life gives you, will not offer you anything more than what is produced of karma, or what will produce more karma. There's nothing here that is not my own karma, somebody else's karma, or a combination of both karmas. So what is the point? The wise man comes to realize, what is the point of adding more karma to karma? There's no point. So, tadvijnanartham saguru mevabhigachet samitpani shrotriyam brahmanishtham. Second half of the verse says, that person who wants to know what is absolute truth, because dharma is also not absolute. It's relative. Everybody has their own dharma. That's called swadharma, your individualized dharma. And it's not the same for everybody. The only dharma that's the same for everyone is your sanatana dharma. That is devotional service. Savaipungsam paro dharma, it's also called. So when a person wants to understand that absolute truth, he has to go to a guru. In other words, as Srila Prabhupada many times points out, those who would accept initiation, the prerequisite for accepting initiation is that one has to be done with the business of material enjoyment. Or as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita very nicely, vinivritta kama. His interest in sex life is finished. So this is why Narad Muni, as Prabhupada concludes his purport, he is not under the subjugation of this influence, jara. He is immune to the attack of jara or invalidity. He is pure, purified in heart, purified in body also. This is the brahmacharis they know, that celibacy is very valuable, at least for the men. As valuable for the men as chastity is for the women. Very, very powerful. One can become very powerful through retention of semen for the men and through careful chastity for the women. Therefore, we see these Naishtiki brahmacharis like Narad Muni. We remember earlier in this canto, she wanted to marry him, isn't it? And he wouldn't accept. And similarly, we find so many Draupadi, Sita Devi, Savitri, so many chaste women, they become very powerful. Sita Devi, by the power of her chastity, brought about the destruction of the most powerful demon in history, practically speaking, whom even the devas would tremble at. Ramchandra was so much obligated to her. That's the example, at least. We know that she is the expansion of the goddess of fortune, but the example is given for us. So even on a physical level, certainly on a mental level, and one can spiritually elevate by very carefully controlling this sex desire. That is the path of deathlessness. That is the path of deathlessness. So Narad Muni is on that path, and unfortunately, almost everyone else in this world, they become bewildered by this Bhima Sainika, the terrible soldiers of the Kalakanya and her husband, I guess you can say, Prajwara. Very difficult to overcome. Therefore, those who take the brahmachari vow, they're called Brihadvratas. They take the big vow. It's a very, very noble thing, very beneficial thing also. So, avyakto bhima sainikaha loke smin. In this world, ubhabhyam charami, I go around assisted by you two, imperceptibly. This is the real wonder of Maya. It is working imperceptibly. We don't realize how we're in Maya until later on. Think about, say, 5 or 10 years ago, what you were feeling in Krishna consciousness as compared to what you feel now. There's usually a big difference, at least there should be. So Maya is working on us all in imperceptible ways, and the most wonderful thing of all, Yudhishthira Maharaj says, is that although we see them dropping like flies all around us, still we just blow it off as if it's not going to come to us. Very, very wonderful thing. This is the Adbhuta Maya. So anyway, you have to be in Maya one way or the other. In Krishna consciousness, we're not really interested in getting out of Maya. We're interested in getting into a different Maya. That is really the essence. Because you have to be either in Yoga Maya or in Mahamaya. So the devotees appreciate Maya. This is the characteristic, especially the Gaudiya Vaishnavas. They appreciate Maya more than anyone. It's like Subhadra Devi. We're worshipping along with her brother and sister and two brothers. She's considered to be the representative of both Yoga Maya and Mahamaya. So she's called Bhuvaneshwari in her Mula Mantra. Because her husband is Bhuvaneshwar. Bhuvaneshwar is Lord Shiva, Lingaraja. So sometimes she's called, as we say, Hara. Hare Krishna. The word is actually Hara. That is feminine of Hara, is Lord Shiva. It also applies. Of course, we take it as Radharani because we're not interested so much in the external energy. That's for the Shaktas. But the Bhaktas are interested in the internal potency, Srimati Radharani, ultimately. And Lakshmi, and Sita, and Subhadra, all these expansions. Vrinda Devi, so many gopis, Purnamasi, all of them. They're all expanding the same energy. So devotees are taking shelter of Maya. And as a result of that, they become deeply absorbed in Krishna consciousness. Like Prabhupada used to say, deep water fish. You have the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, the ocean of the nectar of devotion. So Prabhupada says you should become like fish and dive deep into that ocean. dive deep into Yoga Maya. That takes some qualifications, doesn't it? It takes the prerequisite, as I said, of Brahman realization. We can see that Srila Prabhupada, his preaching was very different than that of other even Gaudiya Vaishnava acharyas, because he had this unique qualification of empathy based on his genuine spiritual realization. What is that verse in chapter 6, text number 32? Anyone know? First line. Atma upamyena sarvatra samam pasyati yorjana sukham va yadi va dukham sa yogi paramomata. Krishna says, in my opinion, the best yogi is that person who's able to empathize with all others by dint of comparison to his own experience. So Srila Prabhupada was able to do this, and we can see successful preachers, even now, they're able to do this. They have this wonderful qualification of being able to understand another person. How is he conditioned by Maya? What is his spiritual attraction? What is the requirement here to elevate this person? It's a very rare gift. I asked Gopi Puranadana Prabhu that where does this empathy come from? And he just said it's a gift from God. It comes from above, divine grace. So certainly Srila Prabhupada had the divine grace of his spiritual master because he took the instructions he received from them so seriously. He was blessed. We can also become blessed like that if we follow in his example, as he has asked. Many times he used to say, do as I'm doing. So once we come to this genuine, once we are situated in piety, yesham tvanta gatam papam jinanam punya karmanam, te dvandva moha nirmukta, Krishna says, when we are relieved of all the reactions of our past sins through Krishna conscious practice, and when we are solidly situated in natural piety. Natural piety means you're pious by nature. You are inclined to this civilized behavior by nature. Then we can cultivate the knowledge that culminates in genuine spiritual realization, Brahman realization. What is that Brahman realization? I am not my body. That is the beginning point of bhakti yoga. And the first thing of substance that is spoken in Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna when he was bewildered. That is the important thing. That lesson has to come first. Then we have the option of diving deep into yoga maya. And there are so many choices we can make there. Anyone who has read Brihad Bhagavatamritam, you can see, although there is absolute truth, it's highly relative affair also. There are so many options that are available. Just like in this material world, although your swadharma, your varnashram dharma, say, is a function of your eternal dharma, it's both relative and absolute at the same time. It's relative because it's different from everyone else's. It's absolute because it's a function of your parodharma, your bhakti, as acting as a prerequisite of that bhakti. That's clear in Vishnu Purana. Arva Muni enlightened Maharaj Sagar. Maharaj Sagar had asked him a very good question. He said, how can ordinary people in this material world become Krishna conscious? How can they take up pure devotional service? He was asking about pure bhakti. And how can ordinary people attain this pure bhakti? He wanted to know. And the answer that Arva Muni gave him, a very long answer, it comprises several chapters of the, I think it's in book 6 of the Vishnu Purana. He says, Varnashram acharavata purushena parapuman, ityadi, that verse. That Varnashram dharma is the way to become purified in heart. And I think for that reason, probably, Srila Prabhupada said it was the remaining 50% of his mission just before he left this world. That's what he said. And actually, one scholar, he did a survey, or he did a, he took some statistics somehow. He found that Srila Prabhupada gave 80% of the instructions that he gave on Varnashram Dharma in the last 3 years that he was with us. One can assume it's because he saw that we were having trouble, perhaps. Hard to say on that. But this is the idea. When one is fixed in that piety, then there is a question of Brahman realization, genuine spiritual realization, and then we can take to bhakti, mad bhaktim labhate param. So this is the great science. Now, the beauty of Krishna consciousness is that you don't have to go through this whole long, arduous, gradual task of elevation according to the ordinary norms, although we don't neglect these norms either. That's the important thing, as I said earlier. There's no such thing as vikarma yoga. You have to follow your dharma, but we don't emphasize it. We simply take directly to the process of shravanam, kirtanam, vishnu, smaranam, archanam, vandanam, dasyam, sakhyam, atmanivedanam. So, of course, the initial thing is hearing. That's the very first thing. Chanting naturally follows from that, as does remembrance of Lord Vishnu. But here we're talking about sex desire in this verse. And the Yavanaraj, who was evidently contemplating illicit sex even with the person he accepted as his sister, Kalakanya. So how do we become elevated from this? This is the problem. The chanting of the holy name will purify us. It's true. But another thing that Srila Prabhupada recommended very strongly was deity worship. In fact, if you read his commentary on this verse, the Shravano Kirtanam Vishnu verse in 7th canto, Prahlad Maharaj, when he gets to discussing Archanam, he makes a very strong statement. He says, for the householders, the path of deity worship is especially recommended. And he says, in fact, because of the contamination of so many mundane activities throughout the day, he said, if the householder does not take to the path of deity worship, his fall down is positively assured. That's a direct quote. Very strong statement. So, deity worship. What are the elements of deity worship that can help us in this way? Those who are associated with Maya in so many ways. Deity worship. What is the attractive principle of sex life? There's beautiful form to see. Everyone is attracted by the opposite sex. Nowadays, even the opposite sex doesn't necessarily have to attract one. People are attracted by the same sex. Either way, one is interested in some beautiful form to see. So behold the beautiful forms of Krishna, Radha and Krishna, deities. And there's touch is also there. Tactile sense is satisfied in deity worship. One can massage the lotus feet of Krishna with nice fragrant sandal oil. One can bathe the deities and dry them. The intimacy is also there, very affectionately. Deity worship, one should do that. Prema puja. As we know, what is that? Duryodhana ko bhoga nakayo rukhasago vidura gharikayo. This song is, I think it's by Vasu Ghosh Thakur. That Krishna was not interested in accepting the opulent feast offered by Duryodhana, but he accepted this coarse spinach given by his devotee, Vidura. Krishna is not interested in anything, but he becomes a beggar in the company of his devotees. If something is touched by the fragrance of bhakti, if something is marked with the touch of the lotus hand of his devotee, Krishna is so much attracted by that. As Prabhupada was giving a class once, I don't remember the verse, but he was saying, don't think that Krishna has to eat. There's no such thing as Krishna must eat your offering. Just because you come on time and put your offering in front of Krishna doesn't mean he's interested in it. There's no guarantee. The love has to be there. So Rupa Goswami suggests to us, how can we please Krishna? How can we induce Krishna to eat? He says, Dvijasrinam bhakte mriduni viduran ne vrijagavam dadhikshire sakhyu spurta chipita mushtao muraripo yashodaya stanye vrajayuvati date madhunite yathasida modas.
My dear Lord, just as you took pleasure in the offerings given to you by the Yajnik Brahmana's wives, we know that story, after Govardhan Lila, that happened. And Dvijasrinam Bhakte, Mridani Viduranne, just as you took the foodstuffs in Vidura's house, Vrajagavam, just as you take the milk from the cows of Braja,
Spurtachipana Mushtau Murarepo, my dear Lord Murarepu, enemy of Mura, just as you took the chipped rice out of the hand of Sudama and enjoyed it tremendously, even despite the objections of Rukmini Rani. So, and just as you enjoyed the breast milk of your mother, Yashoda, this is Bilva Mangala Thakur has described, he's glorified it very sweetly. Angadhirudham shishugopagudham stanam tayantam kamalai kakantam sambodhayam asamuda Yashoda Govinda Damodara Madhaveti. The one and only Lord of Lakshmi, the Supreme Mahanarayana, he is sitting in the lap of Mother Yashoda, drinking her breast milk. And she's very much in ecstasy, addressing him as Govinda Damodar Madhava, completely unaware of his majesty and his lordliness. This is the intimacy of that. So just as you took the breast milk of Mother Yashoda and the sweets offered by the young girls of Vrindavan, so in the same way, please accept my offering. This is how we have to pray. We cannot compete with these devotees, so we have to pray hard if we want Krishna to eat. There's a story is there of Raghunandan Thakur. He was the son of which devotee? Govinda Ghosh. So he, one day his father was doing puja, worshipping a deity named Gopinath, who's still there. This is in Bengal, West Bengal. And so one day his father had to go out for some business. So he told his son, who was getting old enough, now today you're going to do the puja. I have to go out, so you offer this prasadam, naivedya, to Lord Krishna and pray for him to eat, he'll eat. So Raghunandan, the son, was making this offering and Krishna wasn't eating. He's looking at Krishna and Krishna's just standing there smiling with his hands to hold the flute. So he didn't really know what to do, so he was begging and pleading with Krishna, please eat. And Krishna is still standing there, not doing anything, evidently. So he didn't know. And he was getting very much agitated. He started crying and yelling for Krishna, please eat. If you don't eat, my father will be so angry with me when he comes home. I've been given this responsibility for the first time. I have to prove myself. Please, just cooperate. Please take your offering like you're supposed to. So Krishna is still standing there, smiling, holding his flute. Finally, Raghunandan Thakur became so much agitated, he picked up a stick and said, threaten Krishna. Krishna, if you don't eat, I'm going to beat you. So then finally Krishna started eating, very nervously. So then later on, when Raghunandan's father came home, Raghunandan, oh Raghunandan, where's my prasadam? So then Raghunandan was very, very nervous. He said, oh prasadam? But Krishna ate everything. So Govinda Ghosh was very angry at his son. He said, what do you mean Krishna ate everything? Sounds like Raghunandan ate everything. So no, father. I took me a long time to get him to eat, but finally he did so. I had to threaten him with a stick. So at this, Govinda Ghosh became a little doubtful. So he thought, let me check this out. So the next day he decided he was going to trick his son. He said, Raghunandan, today I have to go again. You make the offering again, and I'll be back. So this time, he went a little ways, and he hid for some time in the forest, and he came back to watch. So he was hiding behind some pillar or something, looking at his son to see what is he doing here. And he saw that the same thing is going on, and he couldn't believe it. He was absolutely astonished. So he came into the deity room just as Krishna's taking one morsel in his hand and going to eat it. And at that very moment, the deity froze. And if you go there to this day, the deity is still like standing with this little bit of prasadam holding in his hand, ready to eat. Such wonderful love. This is deity worship. This is Archana Siddhi. So this is what we have to do. And this will help us. This kind of intimate dealings with the Lord in a sensual way. Now, I shouldn't say sensual. I should say supra-sensual, transcendentally. Sensual. Krishna consciousness is very, very much like this. All the senses are engaged, and all the emotions, all the mind, everything is completely, perfectly engaged in Krishna. And this is the elevation. So we have this deity worship is especially valuable because it helps us to chant the holy name of Krishna. it helps us. Everything in this age of Kali depends on Harer Nama Iva Kevalam, the holy name alone. And all these other things are accepted in order to help us in this way. So here we have the king of the Yavanas. He continued, "Here's my brother Prajwada. I accept you now as my sister. I shall employ both of you, as well as my dangerous soldiers, to act imperceptibly within the world." Every one of us is imperceptibly attacked by these soldiers, and we have to suffer old age invalidity to the degree that we are involved with Kalakanya. But the devotees are freed from this because they're restrained. They are civilized, and they have a higher taste. We can stop there. Does anybody have any questions or comments? Yes, please.
Srila Prabhupada's purport very closely followed the purport of Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, I believe. So just, and you also mentioned that Sridhar Swami was the original commentator, the original Acharya, I think is the word you used on the Bhagavatam. So I'm just wondering how closely Srila Prabhupada's purports follow the purports of the previous Acharyas. In other words, when we have a long purport from Srila Prabhupada, is that because there was a long purport from the previous Acharyas? And is Prabhupada making the exact same points that the previous Acharya is making?
Yeah.
Is it like an original creation, or is it so, would we be like amazed and astounded at how closely Prabhupada's purports followed the purports of the previous Acharyas?
Yeah, very good question. How closely does Srila Prabhupada follow the purports of the Acharyas? And I would say in answer to that question, or that series of questions, yes to all of the above. sometimes Srila Prabhupada almost just paraphrases what is written in the commentaries and doesn't say anything more. And sometimes Srila Prabhupada adds a substantial amount. I think that's that's his discretion as the Acharya. He has that prerogative, you can say. Generally, I would say, in my experience at least, to the degree that I've read, he follows fairly closely the Acharyas and particularly the later Acharyas. Because another pattern that I've seen in the commentaries is that the later Acharyas say more than the previous Acharyas. It's almost as if you can track the loss of memory due to Kali Yuga, see, over hundreds of years. Sridhar Swami would generally just gloss the words in his commentaries, as he did in this, I was quoting him before. He was just defining each of the words that are used in the verse and not a whole lot more than that. And then Jiva Goswami will sometimes add a few or clarify if something is just not clear in Sridhar Swami's jika. And then Vishwanath Chakravarti, Sanatan Goswami sometimes will say something. They will add more, generally. And Srila Prabhupada's purports tend to be the longest. Not always, but this is a general pattern that I've seen. So, I mean, at times he just doesn't say a whole lot. I haven't really studied them in that much detail to really see any overall patterns across the entire Srimad Bhagavatam or anything like that, because there's, thousands and thousands of purports. But that's a general tendency that I've seen, which is pretty salient. So, in this particular verse, and in the last few verses that I've seen, Srila Prabhupada tends to be following Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. And similarly, in his Bhagavad Gita, he follows mostly Baladeva Vidyabhushana, to whom he dedicated that Bhagavad Gita as well. So like that. Then again, you have, Krishna book. There's quite a bit added there because it's a summary study. And Nectar of Devotion, same thing. It's not verbatim. It's not even necessarily organized in the same way as the original book. But the principle is that Prabhupada is trying to enlighten us, and he's telling us what we need to hear, and he's giving us the Siddhanta again and again and again and again and again, in purport after purport. I have often thought about this, that sometimes we see that Prabhupada takes the pain and the trouble to quote in full very basic verses such as Dehino asmin yatha dehe komanam yovanam jada, all the way through, from the first canto all the way to the 10th canto. Why is that? Because if we don't hear these things again and again and again, we don't get a sense over time of what is really important, what constitutes the Siddhanta. Repetition of a thing is necessary in order that the subject matter be understood, Srila Prabhupada says. And we can see that his purports are very repetitive. Some see that as a flaw because they don't understand the purpose behind it. Prabhupada, actually, Gopi Paranadana Prabhu told me that Prabhupada said the purports are more important than the verses. Think about that. The purports are more important than the verses. The purports are resting entirely, based entirely on the verse only. But they're more important because they bring out the Siddhanta. The things that Srila Prabhupada, especially the things that he adds to what the previous acharyas have said, it can be assumed that those are the things that are most relevant to the modern world and what we need to hear. Every acharya is reiterating what went before. The word for translation is called anuvada. But anuvada doesn't really mean translation, literally. It means retelling. In every generation, practically speaking, but certainly from time to time, we have these prominent acharyas who write their commentaries, and every one of them is repeating the same thing that was said before, but in the new context, in order to fit the new context. And that's really what's so beautiful about Srila Prabhupada's books. He has written these purports in such a way that an ordinary layman can understand them, and they're fully authoritative, and they're also fully relevant. That's not an easy task. The only person who can do that is the person that Krishna considers to be the best yogi. He had that degree of empathy on account of his genuine spiritual realization. As Dr. Stilson Judah said, Srila Prabhupada was the genuine article. Who told me this? Somebody told me, I think it was Satyaraj, that when Stilson Judah died, some devotees went over to see him at his house in Berkeley. And his widow, Mrs. Judah, I guess, she took the devotees down into his, like he had some basement, something, private place where he used to go and do this confidential work. So he had an altar there, and Srila Prabhupada's picture was on the altar. He had so much respect for Srila Prabhupada because he was intelligent enough and educated enough to realize just what is Prabhupada's special qualification. So I'm deviating maybe from your question, but Srila Prabhupada sometimes very closely paraphrases the acharyas, and he sometimes adds a little more, but he rarely ignores them. Yes, Archit Prabhu?
Thank you again for a very nice class, and especially this particular point on the end here. I'd just like to maybe add that, as Prabhupada told one devotee who once told Prabhupada that Bhaktivinoda Thakur was his favorite author, Prabhupada said, "No, I'm your favorite author."
Yes.
In other words, don't waste your time. Mm. For the average devotee, it's not recommended at all that you try to go back to all these other commentaries. For what purpose? Mm. Prabhupada has already distilled all of that knowledge from Krishna down to Lord Chaitanya through the six Goswamis, all the way down. It's all been distilled for, as you said, for Kali Yuga, loss of memory brains. Mm. Don't waste your time going back to try to read all these other commentaries. Just read Prabhupada's purports, cram them like a lawyer knows his law books, as Prabhupada himself said, and you're set.
Yeah.
You don't have to waste your time.
This is such an important point. It's such an important point. It really is. Swabhas Prabhu.
Yeah. Thank you for a nice favorite class. I think that another thing that kind of struck me was that there's two Bhagavat. There's the book and then the person. Mm. And I've known a lot of devotees that aren't very good at reading on a regular basis Prabhupada's literature, books, his translations. But I do notice that from them, all of them always remember and have a deep affection and respect for Srila Prabhupada. Mm. So they saw him as that person. Mm. So, you know, and it says that if it's either the book or the person, if one actually simply surrenders, that they can become a self-realized soul. So, you know, it just kind of brought out in me that, wow, you know, although Prabhupada did do these wonderful translations, but still he lived them.
Mm.
You know,
that's
he actually lived.
Yeah. I mean, that is the point.
The Bhagavatam and the Gita. And if you saw him, if you worshipped him and served him, you actually became a devotee. Because in the beginning, I didn't read anything. I just saw Prabhupada and that was it for me. There was something just looking at him and you could just tell that he was just an extraordinary individual.
And that's what struck me. And I still even know devotees today, 35 years later, that rarely read or even open a Bhagavatam, but they still have affection and love for Prabhupada by his actions.
Radiant with bhakti.
Yes.
Personified bhakti. Person Bhagavata. Very good point. Vede gai jahara charita. He is the manifestation, tangible personification right in front of us of all the teachings. The Bhagavata. Yeah, there's such an important point. And it kind of relates with what Archita Prabhu was saying because, you know, his point is Guru Mukha Padma Bhakyo Chitete Kori Aikyo. You know, Arna Kori Omani Asha. Do not desire anything else. Just cram these purports, learn the Siddhanta that Prabhupada has taken so much pain to give us. So much austerity he underwent just to make sure that we got it. So, you know, we can show our appreciation by making these instructions one with our heart and not desiring anything else. Because ultimately the culmination of all this knowledge, all this wisdom, is that character of devotion that Prabhupada manifested for us. Excellent points. Okay, anything else? All right. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.